You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh, yeah. I like that. What is up, my friends? Appreciate you joining us. This is the UFC Vegas 51 post-fight show. Here on MMA Fighting, and also we're getting a little Bellator 277 as well. It's your weekend wrap-up. My name is Sean Oshadi. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined by the crew. You already know him, the man with the best Bobby Hill tattoo in all of MMA. Not even close. Jose Youngs.
Best Bobby Hill tattoo on planet Earth. Let's get it right.
I love it. Got the Lord of the Hot Take out there in Georgia, my man Jed K. Mishu. And of course, the undefeated E. Casey Layden. Manning the boards from the producer's desk. And thank you to you all as well. We're going to field your questions, comments later in the show, as always. But let's get rolling, fellas, because what a weekend. What a weekend we just went through. One of the more bizarre weekends we've ever had. Two events, 2 days. And in those 2 days, Jose, you had a really nice rundown of this on Twitter. Within the last 24 hours, we have seen a heavyweight spike himself onto his opponent's skull. We've seen a no contest in a title fight that was for $1 million, where if it had lasted five more seconds, somebody wins $1 million. We've seen a controversial end to a fight that Bellator should probably have called one of their biggest of the year. And then tonight we saw two technical decisions after illegal blows and in very bizarre and I think incorrect fashion. And we also got a Daniel Kinahan shout out just for a good measure. So, you know. Just another lovely weekend out here in MMA. But fellas, let's start with what we just saw from UFC Vegas 51. Bilal Muhammad defeating Vicente Luque in the main event. And this was, I think, an upset in a lot of people's eyes. Not many people were out there picking Bilal. But once again, it is the wrestling of Bilal Muhammad that carried the day. He calls out Colby Covington afterwards. Jose, let's throw it to you, man. I mean, your immediate reaction to what we just saw.
I was absolutely flabbergasted. I mean, I agreed with our own Damon Martin on the preview show that, like, if you want to call Vicente Luque one, if not the most exciting fighter on planet Earth, I'm not going to argue with that. And I said, Bilal Muhammad is very good. I just think Vicente Luque is better everywhere. And my God, did Bilal Muhammad prove me. I'm not even going to say prove me wrong. He proved everyone on the site wrong, essentially. I don't think anyone picks Bilal Muhammad to win. I thought Vicente Luque, he lost the first couple rounds. I thought he was going to go in there and just blast him, maybe get a Darce choke on like a lazy shot from Bilal Muhammad. But Bilal Muhammad, just what, like 7-8 wins in a row and is like one win away from a UFC welterweight title shot? That is not something I had on my bingo board for 2022, but good on you, Bilal Muhammad. You proved everyone wrong, and hopefully they run this back a third time, because I didn't think it was a bad fight whatsoever, and Vicente Luque just looked oddly flat and had Carlos Condit-esque takedown defense. So weird fight all around, not anything I predicted.
Yeah, you mentioned the picks. I mean, I'm just breaking the fourth wall here. Internally, we have like a little Slack room where we make our picks, and I think there's maybe like 8 or 10 of us in there, and there was not a single person tonight who picked Bilal Muhammad. Not one. Everybody. Vicente Luque across the board, and I think a lot of people out there in the MMA land just generally were following suit. Jose, you mentioned Vicente Luque looking a little flat today. I would agree with you as well. Jed, for you, man, I mean, are you surprised? Are you as surprised as Jose by what we just saw? And really, I guess, who Bilal Muhammad is in this division, who he has become?
Oh, Mr. Mishu, you're
we can't
Jed,
hear you.
Muted. Come on, the professionalism here. What is this?
Oh, no.
I unmuted?
Yes, there you go, now you are.
Okay, I don't know what happened there. I absolutely disconnected my microphone. Good choice. my bad. Hand up, guys. As I was saying, Bilal Muhammad, full credit to him. I thought he fought a really smart fight. Brilliant. That lateral movement gave Luque fits. And the commentary team, which maybe we'll talk about, who I was not thrilled with for much of the night, I do thought that they nailed that it wasn't the takedowns so much as the lateral movement that was setting up the takedowns. Because when Bilal was shooting just blast doubles to like down the pipe, Luque was getting his hips back and keying off them. But when he was pairing it with some lateral movement, he was getting them easily. And so like, and that was really kind of the key to the fight for him. So first, incredible effort from Bilal, and take nothing away from him. Second, I don't know. Maybe I was just wrong about Vicente Luque. This, like, it looked like he went back to Michael Graves, like, coming off tough, can't defend any sort of a takedown. And, like, I don't know what the stats are. I'm not looking at him, but Bilal had to have landed 95% of his takedowns in that fight. Like, he did not fail when he was trying to take the fight to the mat. And on the feet, I thought in that third round, Luque was going to come on strong. He had started to build momentum, but he just kind of never built off that. And Bilal straight out worked him. So great performance from Bilal. It doesn't change my opinion on his ceiling, frankly, other than by one spot. I think I had him right below, and he's going to go up in front of Luque. I still don't think he's going to beat the guys at the top of the division, but incredible performance. You can't take anything away from that.
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head. The takedowns themselves were impressive, especially the open mat takedowns, where it's just the center of the cage and he's getting Vicente Luque down. But that movement too, I mean, he was really stifling Vicente Luque with all the lateral movement and just everything he was doing out there. You mentioned the stats. I got the stats up in front of me. 5 out of 10 takedown attempts, so really 50%, but he was just dogged in there in his pursuit of them. And that seemed to be really the key for him.
That is very surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, Jose, man, where do you put Bilal now in this division? I mean, Jed mentioned it. Now he moves one spot up, just getting to essentially taking Luque's spot. Does he feel like he's one win away from a title? Like, is this sort of, is he now in this conversation, this very real conversation, when we talk about these guys below Kamaru with, you know, Hamzat Shamayev and a Colby Covington?
I mean, you have to put him in that discussion solely for the fact that he's winning. And I know a lot of people don't view mixed martial arts as a sport. They view it as more as entertainment. But I've always been on the side that wins and losses matter in MMA. And he's kind of like the welterweight Beneil Dariush, where all of a sudden he's racked up a bunch of wins in a row out of nowhere. And then similar to how Beneil Dariush beat Tony Ferguson, and he just kind of one win away before getting hurt. It's kind of what Bilal Muhammad's done. He just kept winning and winning and winning and winning. No one wanted to fight him. He fought the one that everyone was calling the dark horse in the division, Vicente Luque, and beat him. So theoretically, I mean, not even theoretically, the only ones above him would be who? Gilbert Burns, Colby Covington, Hamzat, and the champ. So if we're just going off of wins and losses, it has to be one of those guys. I know Dana wants Hamzat and Colby to fight. I think Bilal Muhammad wasted a calling out Colby Covington, because it felt like for the whole week or so between Hamzat's fight and his fight, he kept talking about Hamzat, how Hamzat can beat everyone in the division except for me. I think those are his exact words. So why not just go out there and beat him? And then who's going to argue you don't get the title shot after that? So honestly, throw a dart at either Colby or Hamzat or Gilbert Burns or whoever they want Bilal Muhammad to fight next, and it makes sense, assuming Leon Edwards gets the title shot. But you have to have that conversation with Bilal Muhammad in that top five right now.
I am so glad that you just mentioned that call out, because that was what I was going to bring up next, because it was almost a perfect night for Bilal. He comes out here. He really, I think, impressive performance for a lot of people. I'm sure a lot of fans probably still won't give him his respect because of the way this played out. But regardless, you do that to Vicente Luque, that's impressive. But to call out Colby, like, after all this time, you have spent so much time calling out Hamzat, saying, I want Hamzat. Hamzat's the guy I want. I want to, you know, dispel all this hype. We already know there's a chance. Who knows if Colby's going to accept that fight with Hamzat or not. Jed, did Bilal botch this call out?
Totally. Absolutely. Categorically, this was an awful call out from him. And I don't remember who he called out last time with the Thompson win, but, like, I feel like he did the same thing. Like, he's just not quite he's not quite reading the room when it gets into the post-fight interview. Because Chimaev was absolutely the right call out. Like, that the UFC may want Chimaev Covington. I talked about it a lot earlier this week with Mike. Covington is one of the greatest shoot themselves in the foot guys in the history of MMA, and might not even want to take that fight anyway. And Chimaev is the path to the title. Like, Chimaev's not going to get the next title fight. Leon Edwards appears to have that locked up. So Chimaev is the path to the title. You just call for him. And if you get on the mic and yell for Chimaev, and you're the only dude other than Neil Magny who's never going to fight Chimaev, then maybe you just get it, and instead you take the guy that the UFC wants Chimaev to fight. Like, that's just he went with maybe the worst choice. Like, Gilbert Burns makes more sense to me than the Colby Covington one. So I don't know. He did great. Everything he did tonight was great, but for as soon as Daniel Cormier put a mic in front of him.
Well, last thing on this, and then let's move on. Jose, match make this out for me. Like, if you're given the keys here at 170, obviously we have Usman, Edwards, that's out. Other than that, everybody's up for grabs. How do you play this out?
If Dana White wants to do the Colby Hamzat fight, I think that's the fight I want to see and the fight everyone else wants to see. So if everything goes according to plan, he fight Hamzat and Colby Covington fight for the number one contender, then I'd probably have Bilal Muhammad fight Gilbert Burns. The storyline is there. Gilbert Burns is Vicente Luque's teammate and coach and training partner. I'm pretty sure he was there screaming. I think I heard him screaming through the television during the main event. So why not just make that fight happen? Gilbert Burns is, I think it's weird he lost, but I don't think his stock has ever been higher in his entire career after that fight of the year candidate. So
100%
Bilal Muhammad, Gilbert Burns, I think it's a good fight. Like, you know, Gilbert Burns can try to get revenge and then throw his name back in the title shot. Or again, there's not really much else that makes sense for Bilal Muhammad because all the money fights also happen to be ranked above him and he just doesn't happen to be the big money fight. So someone's going to have to bite the bullet and fight Bilal Muhammad. And I think Gilbert Burns is the only one that can't say no, considering he's coming off a loss and Bilal's the highest ranked guy, I think, in the division that he would make sense for him to fight next.
Jed, do you like that? Is that how you play it out?
Yeah, I mean, if the UFC clearly wants Covington Chimaev, I am like one of, I think, the few people in the world who's less interested in that. I watch the hell out of it. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't speak to me as much as it does to everybody else. But yeah, that's what the UFC wants, and both of those fights seem extremely straightforward. The only problem with that is that at least from Muhammad's standpoint, if he beats Gilbert Burns, but Chimaev beats Covington, he's still not getting a title fight. So he's either going to have to wait a long time or fight again. And so that would feel a little rude towards Muhammad and what he's managed to accomplish this past couple of years. But beyond that, it's fine.
All right. Well, I'm fine with that too. I mean, this division seems to be in a somewhat of a weird place right now. We really need to get it moving again because it is starting to become a little bit of a backlog, but it does seem like we're going to get some clarity here in the summer. So everybody moving forward will get their spots. Let's move on now. Let's hit the other big action of the weekend, and then we'll bounce back to UFC during the fan question part, because Bellator 277 went down Friday night, and it was probably one of the best Bellator cards that promotion could put on in 2022. And let's just say it was a very, very Bellator card with the way it played out. Jose, you had Pitbull beating McKee, not only in a fight that I would say didn't light the world on fire, but is also a very controversial decision, lots of discussion afterwards. And then Corey Anderson and Vadim Nemkov leaving things totally unresolved in this light heavyweight tournament. Was the way Friday played out, is that a worst case scenario if you're Bellator?
I mean, it could always be worse than what happened, like, especially if, because I was talking with New York Rick on Slack because we were doing social media after the co-main event. I'm like, imagine if the main event was a no contest or a DQ, then that would be the most Bellator ending ever. But, you know, a controversial ending is, I guess, the silver lining in this whole scenario. So not worst case scenario, but it just checks out. The first fight was just so epic and everyone was talking about how AJ McKee might be the best featherweight on planet Earth. And then that fight happened and he just looked like a completely different fighter. Just a weird fight all around. Patricio Pitbull is what, a four-time champion, whatever it is now. So good on him. I hope they run it back again, but it'll probably won't happen because AJ doesn't want to go to featherweight again. He just looked flat. Like, his feet were just he looked so different than any AJ McKee I have ever seen fight in Bellator. I think Casey said it, he tweeted or something like that. Is that like the first round that AJ McKee has ever lost in there? And his stance looked weird. He looked flat. He looked straight up in the air. Like, I want to know what was going on in his training camp, like how much prep he did, or if he changed anything, or if he prepared for Patricio Pitbull to make adjustments. And then what was it after the fourth round going to the fifth, his dad Antonio McKee said, "I got you up four rounds." I'm like, bro, what are you talking about? Like, you are not up four rounds. Like, that's like Teofimo Lopez dad coaching right there. Like, that was a problem. So yeah, not a great night for AJ McKee. He lost to a really talented fighter. He's still obviously an uber talented fighter. AJ McKee still clearly a top five featherweight on planet Earth, maybe top three, top four, but just a weird night for him. And he, again, I can't stress enough that I did not recognize that AJ McKee in there at all on Friday night.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And I want to revisit what you're saying here about how AJ looks. But first, Jed, I mean, how did you score that fight, that Pitbull McKee rematch?
I scored it at the time, 3-2 McKee. I thought he won the first two rounds in the fifth. I went back and rewatched it. And Friday night, if you scored it for Pitbull, I had no issues with it. I thought it was a close fight and totally fine. I do have issues with the 49-46. That seems a little strange to me. But going back to rewatch, I think that first round easily could be a Pitbull round. And so, like, I have no issue with that score whatsoever with Pitbull winning. I echo a lot of what Jose said, though. Like, McKee just looked really strange. And I came with so many questions out of this because I don't know if he looked strange because he thought he was just going to run through Pitbull. If, you know, the cut to 45 is really starting to wear on him and he is ready to be done with that. And so he spent a lot more time focusing on weight-related issues as opposed to prep. Or if, you know, some part of him kind of was okay taking an L so he could get out of that champions contract and bolt. Or maybe he just is a more limited fighter than we kind of ascribed onto him, because realistically, we've seen AJ McKee fight a lot, but it has been mostly being the hammer and kind of – we haven't had to see him apply the depths or go into championship rounds or – show kind of a wide depth, certainly of his striking skill. And so I just don't know where any of the truth lies within that. It could be all of it. It could be factors of all of it. Maybe we all overestimated him a little bit. Maybe he overestimated himself. So I'm really fascinated to see kind of where he goes moving forward from here. But the end result was I thought that he, at the minimum, did not fight a smart or good fight and paid for it by taking that L, which, you know, has pluses and minuses for him, but I don't think that's the way he wanted to get an L.
Jose, the way the rhetoric coming from AJ in the, ahead of that fight was very, very different than I think we've heard from him just generally throughout his career. And it was very, I wouldn't say alarming, but it did sound like someone who was already kind of over what their current situation was, right? He's talking about, inevitable UFC champion. He's talking about all the contract negotiations. I won $1 million per fight. You know, I think at some point during his MMA Hour interview, he said, you know, I don't need to train as hard for these guys, type of thing. Do you feel as if, like, AJ, did you feel if that first win, that way that Pitbull fight played out, running through a guy that we had all proclaimed as the greatest fighter in Bellator history, do you think that kind of got to AJ's head a little bit and that he was maybe feeling himself a little too much into that? Or is this really just about what Pitbull did and, you know, he just came in with a spectacular game plan?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, how much, like, even before the first fight, like, I remember back, like, this was way long time ago, back when I first started MMA fighting, me, Casey, and Esther went to, like, the Featherweight Grand Prix, like, media day, where it was even before they had the seeding. It was like they had all the matchups announced, and then they were going to fight, and then the winners would then be seeded. And the entire interview I do with AJ McKee, he kept complaining about how Pitbull wasn't fighting him first, or he wasn't matched up with Pitbull, because he wanted to fight Pitbull and get the belt and then get his lightweight belt, because Patricio Pitbull had, you know, I think rightfully so, been labeled the greatest fighter in Bellator history. He was the champion. It was a tournament for $1 million, and he was the lightweight title, which AJ McKee wanted. And then he beat him. So then what do you have to do next is fight him at lightweight, and then he gave up the belt. So I just felt like the thing that AJ McKee had been chasing for his entire career, he had accomplished. And then he had that feeling that I'm sure everyone else has had in the world at some point in their life, like, well, what do I do now? I can't leave, and I guess I have to fight him again in a way that I already beat him. And, like, there's a reason Conor McGregor probably didn't do that with Jose Aldo, you know, the whole time he's like, I want to fight Jose Aldo, the greatest featherweight of all time, and then you knock him out in 13 seconds, and then you just bounce, and then all of a sudden you go up to fight lightweight. Probably what AJ McKee should have done, or what Bellator should have done with AJ McKee, because what AJ McKee, Patricky Pitbull, you know, the second Pitbull brother for the title, the vacant title, that would have sold too. Like, I get what AJ McKee is saying, but it's just, you can't mess around and not take Patricio Pitbull seriously. The man had a game plan in place, just kicked the hell out of his legs and then piece him up and then win a decision. I'm sure that he wanted the stoppage, but yeah, I think you used the word alarming, and it was. It was very alarming to hear AJ McKee talk a lot about non-Patricio Pitbull stuffs before he was about to get into a fist fight with Patricio Pitbull.
Last thing on this fight, because I agree with a lot of what you're saying there, Jose. I mean, Jed, what do you do now if you're Bellator? Like, I don't even, it didn't even seem as though, I mean, watching the post-fight press conference, it didn't seem like there was even certainty if AJ is still a Bellator fighter or if he's a free agent with this championship clause situation. Like, if you're Scott Coker and you're AJ McKee and you need to sit down and figure this out, what's the move? What do you do from here?
I have no idea. Because it sounds like AJ doesn't want to get the featherweight belt back, which I think Jose nailed it. AJ should have just gone to lightweight. Like, he should have pulled an absolute Conor and be like, all right, I won this as cleanly and dominantly as a man can win a fight. I'm not going to run this back. We can go fight for the lightweight belt if you want. And then, you know, gone from there. But he didn't, and now we're here. And if AJ is somehow still under Bellator contract, which wouldn't make sense to me, but I guess it's plausible, I guess they lobby to run back a third fight, because that is the fight that should be made at this point. Whether it happens at featherweight or lightweight, I guess, is anyone's guess at this point. But my assumption is that he is not. He lost, and so shouldn't be subject to any champions clauses that are in effect, and so should be a free agent. And based on everything he was saying before the Pitbull fight, it sounds a lot like he wants to go to the UFC. So I have honestly no idea what's going to happen, but it's going to be really interesting because I'm excited to see him in the UFC and fight those guys. But I also think it's really funny that he was talking a lot of, to steal Jose's phrase, a lot of greasiness about Alexander Volkanovski not being all that impressive. And then he goes out and lays that egg. So that will bring, he will come to the UFC with, something to prove, which I think will be really, really interesting.
Well, we're certainly going to get a lot of clarity, I think, in the coming days regarding the contract situation, where just AJ, if he's free, if he's staying, all of that. If he is free, he definitely lost a lot of zeros on whatever that UFC offer would be. And I think he's going to have to lower his expectations for whatever that offer will be, because now it's certainly going to be much less than it would have had he come out and replicated that first performance against Pitbull. Dude, if he does stay with Bellator, though, I don't think we're going to see him fight a featherweight again. Like, I don't think the trilogy fight almost doesn't even make sense at this point, even though, you know, logistically it makes sense. But it just feels like what AJ needs to do is move to 55. I don't know how long he can continue to make this cut. It seems like it's really difficult for him. You still have a story there with the Pitbull brothers, Patricky having the lightweight title. I don't know. The whole thing is so much more of a mess than it was. What's that?
Does that not feel weird to you, though? To like,
feels completely weird.
Put him in against an like the Ersatz Pitbull brother. Here, you just lost to the good one. Why don't you fight the one who's not as good?
Like, I think it's just about getting a belt back on him, right? Like, push, and then you can resume what you were trying to do with him before. Anyway, let's move now, and let's move to the other half.
Give me AJ versus Brian Ortega. That's all I want. I don't care about. Let's just manifest that. That bit of violent nonsense into the world.
I'm here for it. Let's now talk the other half of that Bellator poo-poo platter that we were handed on Friday. the $1 million finals of the Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. And it turns out no one wins $1 million. It's just still sitting there. That giant oversized check doesn't go to anybody. It just goes in the trash. A no contest between Corey Anderson and Vadim Nemkov. Accidental clash of heads in the closing seconds of the third round. It kind of seemed like if the fight lasted just five more seconds, it probably goes to the scorecards and Corey Anderson leaves San Jose with, you know, a giant oversized novelty check. But that doesn't happen. Jose, what was your biggest takeaway coming away from this supposed end to this tournament that didn't actually end?
It was honestly, yeah, that makes sense. Like, this would happen to Corey Anderson. You know, he labeled himself the best light heavyweight in the world. I know a lot of people in the rankings, including people on our site, put Corey Anderson as the number one light heavyweight in the world, but the fact that there's some debate proves that he's not, like, obviously undisputed top light heavyweight on planet Earth. And I think beating Nemkov pushes him that much closer to it. And he said it himself, he views himself as the champion. Unfortunately, Corey Anderson's sportsmanship got the like blew up in his face because he accidentally it was the accidental headbutt, and he's the one that alerted the ref. And if he had waited 5 seconds, he would have $1 million and a big shine and two belts, one Grand Prix belt and one light heavyweight championship. So, and a bunch of 50 cents bad champagne being poured on him. So, yeah, just all around, like, this makes sense for what is happening right now. You know, Bellator put a lot into this light heavyweight Grand Prix. It seems like the bad luck bug had bitten their bantamweight Grand Prix that they put all this marketing behind. So why not have it leak into the finales of the light heavyweight Grand Prix, right? So unfortunate all around. Corey Anderson, I still view, like, I thought, like, I think we can all agree he was about to win that fight. He was dominating that fight against a seemingly undersized Vadim Nemkov. And I think one of my biggest takeaways from him is Nemkov looks like a middleweight compared to a lot of these light heavyweights. And just that much more impressive what he did to previous light heavyweights, which makes it even more impressive what Corey Anderson was doing to Vadim Nemkov. So good on you, Corey Anderson. You were a good sport, but you lost out $1 million. And I fully expect you to get that giant goofy check, bad champagne, and two belts in your next fight.
I mean, you said a lot there, but I got to say, Corey Anderson impressed, I think, a lot of people with the way he came out there and surprised Vadim Nemkov by really almost like breaking him by the end of that third round. It did certainly seem as though things were trending his way. But Jed, you made a point several times on Friday night to point out that Corey Anderson didn't actually win that fight. So all of us ascribing victory to him were maybe being a little premature. We just went through this with Sterling and Jan. Jed, when we started this tournament, we had all these big dreams. It was Romero Rumble was on that. I remember that being a thing at one point.
We got none of them. None of the big dreams happened.
None of them end up coming true, and we end up here. Are you disappointed with how this all played out? Like, what do you make of how of this tournament, this weekend, and just, I guess, did this weekend affect the way you think of Corey Anderson moving forward now?
Well, first, the thing I do want to say, because we've said it and a bunch of people have said it, so we're clear, if that fight had made it to the end of the round, it still would have resulted in the outcome that we got. A technical decision requires the fight to go past three rounds and into the fourth. So that fight would have been stopped on the stool between rounds the same way. And because we never got a start to the fourth round, it should not have gone to the judges' scorecards. It would have still just been rendered a no contest, just so we're clear, because I'm sure somebody knows this and is mad at us about saying this. Yeah, this was the most GP thing of all time for just hey, we've done a tournament and nothing goes the way we want it to, and then we don't even get a satisfying conclusion. And Jose, we were talking before this, they like brought out the big novelty check and then they had to take it away. It was just, it's just the most unbelievably funny possible outcome to this whole situation. And so while it's objectively bad for almost every reason, I can't help but smile at what happened on Friday, because it feels incredibly Bellator for this to happen. Shades of Eric Prindle. That's what we have here.
We don't even get like a cool DC's type of story of like DC coming from out of nowhere to win this tournament. Like, it's all just a bunch of nothing. The whole thing.
Just a bunch of nonsense.
It's just a bunch of nonsense. So let's throw away the no contest. We'll throw it aside for a second. We spoke pre-fight about the stakes here in terms of the global landscape at 205, right? It's a very, very weird division right now ever since Glover won the title, because Glover, he's lost to some guys. One of those guys is Corey Anderson. That wasn't super long ago, and that was a very dominant win for Corey Anderson on like 2 weeks' notice, as Corey Anderson said several times in the lead-up to this. Vadim Nemkov, I think a lot of us really like Vadim Nemkov. I think he was pretty highly ranked for all of us on the rankings panel at MMA Fighting. And then obviously, you know, Corey Anderson also has lost recently to Jan Blachowicz. All of this, there's Jiří Procházka out there. Jose, simple question. I'm going to throw this to you, then to Jed as you as well. Is Corey Anderson the best light heavyweight in the world? Is he top two? Where is he?
Three behind Glover and Jiří, I think. I mean, we saw tonight what happens when, you know, sometimes when a guy knocks out a guy or dominates him the first time and then they run it back, doesn't always play out the same way. We just saw that like 30 minutes ago with Bilal Muhammad and Vicente Luque. So I think Glover Serra just, you know, got a lot better, as you do in mixed martial arts, than his loss to Corey Anderson. That was also when, if I remember correctly, in Germany, there was like a lot of, like, they both had to fly over there. Glover Teixeira laid an egg. And since then, he's got a lot of stoppage wins, and Corey Anderson's looked really good too. I think Giri Prochazka is also a psychopath who can just kill a human being with his elbow. So those are the top three. If you want to argue that Corey Anderson is number one, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but I put Glover number one, Yuri number two, and Corey Anderson number three. But it's honestly 1A, 1B, 1C. If we're allowed, actually, you know what? I'm not even on the voting panel, so that's my rankings. 1A, 1B, 1C. Y'all can kick rocks with your fake rankings.
Take the power back, Jose. Take the power back. Jed, what do you think? Where's Corey Anderson? Like, how you rank these guys at this point in this light heavyweight division that seemingly makes no sense?
He's probably number one. At the end of this month, I'm probably going to move him up to the top spot. That will be conditional. If Yuri goes out and just, you know, mollywops Glover, then Yuri's going to be the top spot for me, and that's, I'll feel really confident about it. But if he doesn't, and like our own Mike Heck has been just adamantly beaten, Glover's going to tackle Yuri and submit him in the first round train for months. And so if that happens, then yeah, Corey Anderson's probably it. And that's interesting. Not a world I thought I'd ever be living in, if we're being honest. But I mean, you can't deny like what he's doing. He, you know, coming into this fight, maybe I was high on Vadim Nemkov, but he was my second ranked light heavyweight and Corey was my number three. And, you know, he didn't win this fight. I firmly believe he did not win this fight because he did a dumb illegal thing. And, you know, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Well, sometimes. We saw a couple times tonight that if you play stupid games in Las Vegas, sometimes you can just get the win.
Great prizes. So, yeah. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, if they fought, you know, when they do fight again, this time I will be, and I suspect the sports books will be heavily favoring Corey Anderson to win. Now, again, we also saw this last weekend. You know, Piotr Jan did very similar things to Aljamain Sterling and then lost that rematch. So maybe that's what happens here and it all gets thrown up in the air. But for the time being, he's either one or two in my book.
Man, I'm glad that we have a couple weeks to mull this over because we obviously do them at the end of the month. Because I'm right there with you. If I did it right now, I think there's a 50-50 shot I put him in at number one or number two. I have Yuri Prochazka at number one right now. It's all a mess. Like, none of it makes any sense. Glover Teixeira. The fact that Glover Teixeira at age 42 and Corey Anderson, who I think no one expected to really be in this spot at this point, are two of the three best light heavyweights in the world is pretty wild. Wow. Pretty wild.
Daniel Cormier could come off the couch and freaking wreck this division.
You're not wrong. If he could make 205, I don't know if he could make 205 again.
DC can be benching them Doritos all he wants. He could still come in and just house these fools.
Well, Casey, get in here. Let's turn to the peeps. We just saw a lot of fights over the last 2 days. A lot of them were pretty unmemorable, but there were some gems in there as well. What's going on? What are the people saying?
All right. How's everyone doing?
Also, while you're looking around, Casey, Corey Anderson, number one, number two, where are you going to put him this at the end of this month?
I feel I want to say he's number one, but then as I start saying it out loud, my brain kind of like, you know, just starts messing up. It doesn't, like, it hurts. Something's wrong. But I think actually Jose had the best thing. Just, it's 1A, 1B, 1C. I think with Glover, Yuri, and Corey right now, I got no issue with either of those guys. My ranking most likely is probably still going to be Yuri at number one, with Corey at number two, and Glover number three, and Nemkov, I guess, four. But it's
what I'm doing.
It's so weird.
Yeah, 205 is very weird right now. 205 is very weird.
It's kind of really fun if you put aside the fact that it's insane.
Well, and it's...
Rumble Johnson might be the best light heavyweight in the world. Who knows, man?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's all good. Ankalaev is going to be like champ at the end of the year.
Yeah. And this
if
is
he
all...
gets a shot, I don't know that Ankalaev will get a shot.
But this is all because John Jones doesn't get along with Dana White. This is all, you know, like, we want to be really having this discussion. Like, just the John Jones thing. You're like, who's that guy? Yeah. All right, here we go. All right, here we go. Just going back to the main event.
From generic profile. He says he knows he has a better shot at Colby than Hamzat. This is obviously talking about Bilal. After his performance against Luque, he can get caught by Hamzat, but not Colby. Thoughts?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say if you're a top four fighter in the division, you're probably not angling for a quote-unquote easy fight, especially if you're Bilal Muhammad. Seems like he's down to fight anyone. So I disagree with whoever this individual is.
Yeah, man. Bilal wants to fight anyone. I agree in principle, though. Like, he does have a much better shot of beating Colby than Hamzat. I don't think he beats either of them, but he has a way better chance against Colby than Hamzat.
Also, he genuinely hates Colby Covington, so I also think he just wants to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
That is hyper valid. Yeah.
That's what that feels like to me. It's like, because all week he'd been talking that Chimaev stuff, like that's what he knew. And then after 25 minutes of fight, like fist fighting a human being in a cage, he just reverted to like, oh, I actually do just hate this dude and I'd like to fight him next.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to yesterday's main event.
All right, this one's coming from Jamie, who said, I had it 4-1 AJ, to be honest. 4-1 AJ is not a scorecard I have seen. Okay. The rules say submission attempts that either have immediate impact or cumulative only affect what? Okay, this is a weirdly worded. Only effect was the pit bull tired himself out. I like him being the pit bull. I'm not sure what he's asking, but 4-1 AJ is a pretty wild scorecard, I got to say. I think I had it 3-1 AJ in the moment. I haven't rewatched it yet.
I called it 3. It'd be 3-2. I had it 3-2, but I also gave AJ the round that he's talking about, the round with the submission, because I discounted the submission. I think on the rewatch, I'm probably wrong about that, and that probably was a pit bull round.
Jose Casey, how did you guys hurt him?
Which I did not recognize in real time that Pitbull like hurt him before that guillotine happened.
I was pretty confident it was the first three rounds were for Pitbull. The last two rounds were for AJ, from my memory. And with the first round being pretty close, but I remember I thought the leg kicks. I've seen so many fights right now. The leg kicks from Pitbull in the round one was what won round one for me. And then of course you had Daddy McKee saying you won every round, which that's a whole thing. Jeez.
That's so rough, man.
Yeah. I'm not gonna get the open scoring thing, but if you're a corner man and unless your fighter wins like an 8.5 round, you have to assume the fighter lost that round. You can't.
Kelvin is losing. There's no downside at that point.
Tonight, I think that what happened in the Luque fight. I think his corner said it might be tied. You just have to win this round. And I was like, ooh, don't do that. So, but back to this question. I had Pitbull winning. I was shocked, but AJ that was the worst AJ I've seen. And also, maybe I just kind of forgot how good Pitbull was too. I'm not quite sure. But
I think probably some of both for all of us. I definitely feel that way.
Yeah, I think not that I got overhyped on AJ, because I still think he's extremely great talent. I honestly forgot how good Pitbull was, and I think about 2 minutes into that fight, I think AJ realized that too. Oh, this guy is very good.
This isn't going to be as easy as last time.
Yeah.
This was the case of an individual got caught early, made adjustments, and the other one thought he could just do the same thing all over again.
Yep.
Like Pitbull had a training camp. AJ's like, I'll cut weight and show up.
Yeah.
How did you score it, Jose?
I had a 3-2 Pitbull. I think I scored the round in question. Was it the third round with the submission? That guillotine with the hair? Yeah. I'd scored that for Pitbull, because I think in the rules they say effective striking and grappling should be considered first priority. I think that's actually written in to the criteria for judging. So that's just how I've always based it. But to each their own, because in MMA we make up rules as we go, as we've seen.
We all just make it up.
Oh my God! Tonight was
there are four different unified
also,
rules.
Let's
tonight
talk
almost
about
gave me an aneurysm with all the Vegas stuff.
How about featherweight title fights and third round guillotines, man? Like, name a more iconic duo than that.
All right. Let me see. Got any other questions?
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. the person who knows the business inside and out. Yep. Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAQ.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
And you, do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
I mean, while we're waiting, Jose, what are your thoughts on this whole cluster F that we saw in Las Vegas today? Like this, the DQs thing, where both of those situations in my eyes should have been DQs. Like how on the setting the precedent of the guy who's ahead 2-0 commits a foul. And because you didn't think the foul was purposeful, you can then end the fight and he just wins. Feels like a super dangerous precedent for me to set. Yeah. You saw a bunch of fighters tweeting that as well tonight of like, if I'm up 2-0 in a fight or 4-0 in a fight, 3-0, what's to stop me from just smashing some dude in the balls until he can't continue and then just getting a win off of that? Like, am I crazy here?
No, I'm glad you brought it.
Right? Oh, sorry.
But I'm glad you brought that up because everyone on this website can pretend they're professional fighters and complain about fighting. But now that we're seeing actual professional fighters saying, like, what's to stop me from doing this, then you have to take it into consideration. I think Ben Rothwell was like he tweeted himself. He's like, what's to stop Bilal Muhammad or Vicente Luque from just grinding out three rounds and then just running in and just blasting the other guy in the nuts and then getting a DQ and calling it a day or something like, or round four or whatever Jed said. So yeah, now professional fighters are talking about it. Something's gonna have to be done because it's a bad precedent if, you know, I'm up two rounds halfway through the third round and go, I'm tired, I'm just gonna stab this dude in the eyes with a couple fingers, Three Stooges style, and I'm still gonna get the rest of my paycheck. So yeah, it's something's got to change in Las Vegas, that's for sure.
I'm gonna play a bit the other side. But wouldn't those be considered intentional? Like, with like, I don't know what's the word. Like,
everything is intentional.
Well, that's the thing. There's no such thing as accidental. I know me and Jed have our differences on this, but yeah, it's like I don't.
It's just how good of an actor you are at that point, right? Like, if you're just MMA, maybe you're just though. A really that's, good actor, and you can be like, oh, I didn't mean to punch this guy in the back of the face, in the back of the head. Like, this is crazy.
But we're also talking about a situation that are we saying these fighters did that tonight? Because otherwise, we're talking about a situation that's never happened before in the thousands of fights we've seen. Unless we're saying that the guys did that tonight on purpose. Are we saying
I'm not going to try to pretend I know. I'm just saying, like, to answer Sean's question, it does set a precedent that you can get away with stuff if you're a good actor.
Yeah, like, I'm sure neither of these dudes meant to throw purposefully illegal strikes, but they did. And they got rewarded for it. Like, end of the day, that's what it is, right? You got rewarded for cheating.
That's
I have issues.
That's with my whole thing. Yeah. Is just like, it's all don't add interpretation. There's no need for interpretation because you know who didn't do anything wrong? The people who got hit by illegal strikes, and they are potentially adversely affected. If a fighter is intentionally trying to actually cheat, meaning they intend to throw an illegal strike to harm their opponent, they should lose the fight and be banned from the sport for 2 years. The same way PEDs are intentionally cheating and get a suspension. If you throw a fight and you foul, you're in charge of your strikes and just, I don't feel like it. And I feel like it just happens a lot where because a fighter is winning and it feels wrong to make them lose because they did a wrong thing, we don't. But it's like the only sport where this happens because it doesn't matter if you intended to cheat or not. Like, I didn't mean to grab that
flagrant
face
fouls
mask.
In NBA.
It was a reflex, and I grabbed his face mask. Cool. It's 15 yards. You did the illegal thing. Don't do the illegal thing because the other guy didn't do the illegal thing, and that's it. Like, it just – I don't know why we've given interpretation to referees, which also – changes wildly, which is another huge issue with this, where Mark Smith can immediately take a point for one and Dan Mergliotta can just be like, nah, we're good, it's fine, I don't feel that was bad, so it's okay. Like, that's just make everything black and white and build from there.
If I'm Peter Yan watching all of this tonight, I'm throwing my remote at the TV like multiple times.
It is very confusing for the Peter. If you throw the Peter Yan situation, it could say the Peter Yan fight was tonight.
Who was reffing the
Peter Yan walks away from the champion as champion at that point because he was ahead on the scorecards.
Who was reffing Yan? Was that Goddard who did that? Like the Yan knee thing?
I feel like I should know this. I feel like I should remember this.
Don't remember offhand.
I can't remember, but like that's goes to the point. Like whoever's reffing can totally define how you do it, and so it's just like I don't.
It was Mark Smith.
Yeah.
Mark Smith is actually pretty good about like actively enforcing the rules that are on the books, which is wild. So good for him.
In the situations tonight, first off, in the Barnett, I forgot his opponent's name, the guy that won the fight. That was a legal strike, first of all. Merglada screwed up. That was a legal strike. That was this elbow, and it hit him in the legal spot. I think he just thought it was illegal. They looked at the replay, and they just made up a new rule, honestly. That's my conspiracy theory. Watch the replay. It was a legal strike. I mean, it kind of really annoyed me. But what was the other DQ?
It doesn't matter.
He was going to win. Whether the blow landed or not, he was going to win anyway. Yeah. That's why it's silly.
It's just stupid rules, too.
That is also the thing that honestly frustrates me a lot is like because it does happen a lot with fighters who are winning, you just don't have to do the dumb thing that's maybe illegal. You can just beat them. Like you are already knocking that dude out. You don't have to throw that elbow or that knee. Barajo doesn't have to throw the grounded knee. Just hit him. You're already winning. Just win.
If you watch that fight,
first class couch cornering advice from Jed telling him just win.
He stopped himself from throwing illegal knees like twice in the second round.
He did that.
He clearly knows what he's doing.
For one, and it was like, oh, never mind. That's illegal.
All right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he even put his hands up.
I rewatched Gilbert Burns and Hamzat, and I was thinking, because technically, if you throw an illegal strike and it misses, it's still illegal. And I couldn't believe Burns got away with that soccer kick.
You also punched Hamzat in the back of the head in that fight.
All right. Yeah.
We're getting way too deep.
Yeah, I know. It was so much.
People cheat all the time.
Let's just go back. Open weights.
Let's do one or two more questions, and then we'll get out of here.
All right.
This one's coming from, I'm going to totally butcher your name, and I'm sorry. Samdut Roy is what my attempt at that is. Who has Luque actually defended takedowns against? Even Chiesa took him down easy before getting submitted.
Leon Edwards, baby. He lost that fight, but he stuffed like 10 takedowns in that fight.
I think the takedowns wasn't what won the fight for Luque. Muhammad. It was the freaking lateral movement. Because if Luque can't get a rhythm, if Muhammad like, just stays still and doesn't have that lateral movement the entire fight, Luque wins that fight. It was once Muhammad stopped moving, he was getting pieced up. I think we all knew that Luque was going to get taken down eventually, but not submitted. It's kind of what we saw, but I think it was the lateral movement that really surprised us. I don't know. It really surprised me. How do you feel?
I think it's both.
Both?
I think the lateral movement was great, but I think if Bilal doesn't take him down, I don't know that he wins the fight, but he was so effective with it.
But it just neutralized Luque's striking to me. Or made it.
Bilal Muhammad had a good game plan. Luque didn't. Vicente Luque also just didn't adjust. There was that sequence when Vicente Luque like clipped Bilal with that left hook and the announcers went ballistic. And then Bilal Muhammad just shot like a blast double leg and took him down. Like he got hurt and he took him down. And Vicente Luque was like, oh no, I'm stuck.
His game plan was like, okay, he did sort of adjust early by like he kept attacking the outside leg when Muhammad would move. So when Muhammad would go to his left, he was nailing that low kick to slow it. And he was going wider with hooks. And then he like after that takedown in the third, after he hurt him, he seemed to entirely revert to just like, I'm going to chase him around the ring and not land punches anymore. It's very fascinated to know kind of what was going on in his head.
the flattest Vicente's looked for a long time. I was about to go rogue with this last question. What do you got here, Casey? Because I got a good one teed up. Gentleman says, can we talk about that Jordan Levitt dance pose? That was impressive. I liked Jamal Hill's response to that of saying, you do that to you twerk after you knock me out. We're fighting again. The second time in the same night.
Talk about the double standard in this sport. We all praise Jordan Levitt for his amazing dance, but then the MMA fans criticize Valerie Lareda for her awesome dancing after a close decision. Double standards here.
Yeah, those people are called incels. Those people are called incels, Casey.
All right, I'm going rogue on this last one. This one, I want to answer this from Tristan Gordet, who brings up a man who we didn't even mention on this show that probably we need to start mentioning really soon. Thoughts on Aaron Pico's performance? He looked incredible and gave you everything you want from a fighter. Y'all, Aaron Pico's time might be here. Like, it might be now. Like, we've been waiting on this guy for a while. It's been about 5 years since he debuted as, you know, the best prospect in MMA and then loses in 24 seconds in his debut. He's won now, 6 in a row. He's looking mighty unstoppable. Obviously, the competition level is not quite there yet. That's not really his fault. This one was a short-notice replacement. But, I mean, what do you guys think about where Aaron Pico is becoming?
Dude, I love Pico. Pico is like one of the very few fighters in MMA who just believes in his soul that punching a man's liver out is like a very valid way to attack somebody.
And dude, he's so the body right. shots.
It's
the
so
body
awesome.
Shots are so grisly to watch, man.
That man throws nasty rib roasters and like does them all the time. I love that dude. I hope he's good. I think he is. I think he's kind of there. Though, again, do question the fact that he has one win over a fighter with a Wikipedia page. Gives you a bit of a pause, but massive amounts of talent, and I love watching him fight.
Yeah, agree.
Is he arrived? Like, is it kind of this time now to do it with him?
I think he's so good. I want to, like Jed said, like, who's he supposed to fight first? Jeremy Kennedy?
Which would have been a great test. If he had beaten him,
the answer is he's like no doubter. Because then we're having a conversation like, does he deserve a title shot next? This and that. He's a big name. Like, if they want to rebook the Kennedy fight, if they want to make the Boric rematch, if they want to make the Mads Brunel fight, like, so be it. But give him a big name next. Yeah. When I say big name, like, you know, a highly skilled opponent that on not on short notice.
The issue for Pico is just that ego fight.
Boric or Brunel. It has to be one of those two for me.
Oh, yeah. Brunel lost that. Do Brunel, right? Yeah.
The only ones above him in the rankings are the champ, AJ, Brunel, and Boric. Those are the only four above him, I believe, in their rankings.
I think you're right. And yeah, I hope he's here. I mean, he's 25 now and been in the game for like 5 years, so he's finally settled. I think he's finally – his big thing was the ego fight just blew him to the moon. It's like, oh, this guy's never fought, and he blew the doors off Leandro Ego, who's like one of our better fighters. And he got rushed a little bit, but
– And he looked pretty good against Corrales before he himself said he got punched in the nose, saw red, and then ran into a fist.
And he was beating Boric pretty good before he lost. Like, he was winning before he lost. He's one of those guys.
There was a moment there where he was kind of a coin flip fighter, and I feel like Brandon Gibson has really, really taken this guy to a different level. Like, ever since they've started working together, Pico's – I'm a believer, man. I feel like that guy's going to be champion in this division sooner rather than later at this point.
The UFC needs to give – Go ahead.
I've been fortunate enough. I've had some kind of behind the scenes access with Mr. Pico training and talked to Greg Jackson and Brandon Gibson about Pico. And I've honestly never heard him speak more highly of a fighter than Aaron. When they got him, essentially they were like, he is the worst MMA fighter, but as individual talents in boxing and wrestling mostly, unreal. And all they had to do was just figure out how to make him a mixed martial artist. As cheesy as it sounds, they had to mix the martial arts with him. Because when they got him, he was just either he was boxing or he was wrestling. He couldn't do both. And it took a little time. But he's ungodly good and committed to the sport. And, I'm pretty much what Jed says. Like, he just incredibly exciting to watch. Just he has it all. And Now we're just waiting for the tougher competition. That's all we're waiting for now. It's just, must-see TV.
All right. Well, let's close it out on that. It was a very, very busy weekend. We saw lots of fights.
Talk about the brilliant commentary from both Bellator and the UFC.
We don't even need to do that. We do not need to do that. There were a lot of fights. Some of them were good. Some of them were not so good. Some of them were weird. It was a weekend.
A lot of them were weird.
Who won the performance? Who won the money? Extra money tonight. We didn't even talk about that.
Hey, there we go. Bonuses. Last second guesses before I say them.
I just looked at it. Ooh, that's interesting.
Fiallo close Lezzez and his opponent.
Yeah, Lezzez.
You got two out of three.
Close.
Lezzez, Losa, fight of the night. Fiallo performance and Clark.
The fight of the night's wrong, and I think that might be because of that post fight interview.
Did that cost $50,000? If I could have gone to maybe Kinzal Landsberg.
Silva versus Wu.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Meyer Brandon Silva, you won, which is feels a lot like Lezzez cost him and homie $50K with that post.
Dude, he cost his opponent $50K. Wow.
It was all his own accord too. Like he took that mic back. Yeah. Like it was over. The interview was
nobody's
over.
Nobody's gonna go. Daniel Cormier's not gonna go ask him. So.
Any murders you want to alleged murders you want to talk about?
All right.
Any people with a $5 million bounty on them you'd like to shout out real quick?
Let's get out of there with that. What a weekend! Really bizarre weekend, fellas.
Yes.
Kind of a thoroughly unsatisfying weekend, if I'm being honest. But
it's a great come down from 273.
Yeah, man.
They can't all be winners. They can't all be winners. And really, performance of the weekend to Bilal Muhammad, because he's the one guy who went out there and did what he needed to do.
You know what? Jesus Christ loves knockouts.
All right.
Happy Easter.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Happy Easter
for everyone. My name is Sean Oshadi. That man is Jose Youngs. That man is Jed Meshew, the undefeated EKC Layden. Thanks for rocking with us all weekend. You know how it goes. Keep it locked, MMA Fighting. You got on to the next one Monday. MMAR Monday as well. We got Fighter vs. Ryder Tuesday.
No MMA Hour this week.
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. I lied.
No MMA Hour this week.
I completely lied. No MMA Hour this week. Next week, though. Either way. You guys know how it goes. Keep it rocking with MMA Fighting the whole week as we do what we do. We love you guys. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you soon. Happy birthday again.
Not my birthday. I'm AK. Go Raptors. We the North.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.